I hope you enjoy this talk. These talks are always offered freely so that no one is ever denied access to these teachings, and your support really makes a big difference. Dana is the ancient Pali word for spontaneous generosity of heart. If you feel inspired to support these talks by offering Dana, you can do so by visiting my website at www.mindfulvalley.com. Thank you so much. So tonight, I wanted to explore how we can use our practice to work with something that I suspect that most of us endure fairly frequently, which is blame and insult. Right? Anybody today have blame and insult? Yeah. Happens a lot, doesn't it? Happens a lot. And as I was thinking about this, I started searching for some famous insults, just for fun. And what I discovered is that the undisputed master of these insults is Shakespeare, who, right, is famous in part for writing some really epic takedowns, right? And I think my favorite of these is one from King Lear, where one character says to another, "Thou art a knave, a rascal, an eater of broken meats, a base, proud, shallow, beggarly, three-suited, 100-pound, filthy, worsted, stocking knave, a lily-livered, action-taking knave, a whoreson, glass-gazing, super-serviceable, financial, finical rogue, a one-trunk inheriting slave, one that wouldst be a bawd in a way of good service, and are nothing but the composition of a knave, beggar, coward, pander, and the son and heir of a mongrel bitch." Wow. Okay. He got it all out. There were so many of these kinds of insults in Shakespeare's writing, actually, that scholars have had to organize them into dozens of different categories of insults. And there's even apparently a modern app now called the Shakespearean Insult Generator. And so, you know, you can look up good ways to insult your friends without actually swearing. And I'll read a few of these because I just loved them. It was so fun. You know, these were written, remember, these were written 400 years ago, which is why they're so fun. "I do desire that we may be better strangers." "More of your conversation would infect my brain. Would thou wert clean enough to spit upon." And a more saucy one, which I guess never goes out of style, is, "Villain, I have done thy mother." So, these are really funny. But, you know, as I'm sure most of us have experienced, one of the main ways that we tend to suffer is really when someone insults us or disrespects us in some way, and we cannot seem to let go of that hurt or that anger that it evokes, you know, sometimes for hours, but sometimes, you know, think about this, for days or even years, decades. Is there something that you might remember that was decades old, some kind of insult that you still kind of hold on to, right? sadly, a part of being human, living this human life, is that we are all going to experience people who are going to be unkind or rude or insulting in some way, or maybe even trying to cause us harm, right? In the Dhammapada, the famous collections of phrases from the Buddha, it says this: ancient is this saying, it is not just of today. They find fault in one sitting silently. They find fault in one speaking much. They find fault in one speaking moderately. No one in this world is not found at fault. No person can be found who has been, is, or will be only criticized and only praised. So sometimes remembering those lines from the Dhammapada helps me to remember when I feel insulted in some way that I'm not alone, right? Because we can get into that kind of thing. And, you know, the truth is that feeling of being alone is so powerful. It's like whenever someone insults us or disrespects us, what happens is that right away there's a kind of a cutting, a separation. And we tend to feel almost instantly more distant, right, from that person, or even strongly averse to the person that just insulted us. It's like, woof, instant separation. And of course, this often leads to a feeling of separateness in general, which, as I've said many times in here before, and the Buddhist teachings show us, our sense of separation is our deepest wounding. It's our deepest source of suffering. So, you know, words really do matter, as we all know, and they can cause great joy or great sorrow. Words are powerful. Shakespeare knew that. He's a master at words, master wordsmith. For instance, even hearing a string of three simple words, right, can create the sense of joy or sorrow. I love you, or I hate you. Three words. I love you, I hate you. Right? So simple. And so because we're human, it really does hurt when someone chooses to insult us, or maybe even verbally assault us. Our words can have lasting effect. Again, you know, we probably all remember something someone said to us that may have seemed sort of matter of fact, maybe, to the person who said it, but it might be something we've really held on to for years that still stings or maybe affects us. You know, maybe it was a parent or a teacher who said something when we were little. Thinking of any of that, those insults now, maybe? Something that was said? Powerful. And, of course, people can often insult or disrespect us not only with their words, but with how they treat us. Right? And the dictionary actually defines the verb insult as, quote, to speak to or treat with disrespect or scornful abuse, to treat with insolence, indignity, or contempt, and even to behave with pride or arrogance. To behave with pride or arrogance. So we might not even realize, for example, that when we're acting prideful or arrogant in some way, this can feel like a form of insult to those who are listening. And so often I think we might not even realize that what we might be saying is insulting, right? We don't even realize it. We're unaware, unmindful of our words. For instance, this often shows up in the form of a question. And the question itself is insulting, right? Can you think of these kind of questions maybe that you've received? You know, a question that is like, oh, You know, you go home and you think, oh, I can't believe they asked me that question. And meanwhile, after the question's been asked, we might be steaming about this for days or years, and that person doesn't really know. You know, I recall is just as an example of a question that's insulting. One of these type of questions I received when someone broke the silence in the middle of like a week-long retreat that I was on a few years ago. Maybe it was longer than a few years ago. It was probably 10 years ago. But they asked me at age, you know, 40-something, if I was pregnant. And, no, I was not. I was chubby. And in the silence, I wasn't able to go all Shakespearean and, you know, say something bad. So the question was insulting. So, you know, we can be insulted by a whole host of people, strangers, friends, loved ones, you name it. And, you know, think about how many times you've been insulted, if you will, by strangers in the form of drivers. Right? Right? And what you say back to the insult, maybe in the privacy of your car. So what I want to explore tonight is how we can let go of what the Buddha referred to as the pain of the second arrow, as it involves the pain of insult. So that first arrow is the pain of that unexpected unkindness, or when we experience some sort of insult, some disapproval or judgment or criticism, or maybe some kind of disrespectful action, or maybe even a kind of disrespect or disregard. Okay? And this insult might be something relatively minor, like maybe a jarring comment, or, you know, maybe someone grabs that parking spot we were coveting and pulls in front of us when we were waiting. You know, it can be something relatively minor. But it might even be something someone didn't do, right? Maybe something you expected them to do, maybe in a certain way, right? Or it might be a really bigger thing that really affects us, like maybe we get turned down for a job. It can feel like an insult, right? Or someone we're in relationship rejects us or leaves the relationship. That can feel like a, you know, an insult. All of those things I just described are considered that first arrow, right? So it's often described as the ouch, that initial ouch, I've just been pierced, the initial hurt of that experience. And of course, the second arrow is how we relate to the pain of the first arrow, the first ouch. And the second arrow is on us. The first arrow, we really, most of the time, have absolutely no control over, right? We'd like to, but most of the time, it just, boom, there it is. We're insulted, disrespected in some way. Boom, we got that arrow in our heart. The second arrow is the one that we shoot into ourselves, right? And as we've all experienced, we can really increase our own pain and suffering exponentially with this one in a myriad of ways. So I want to go over some of the ways that we run with this. And the first and maybe most important way we do this is that we take hold of this insult or disrespect and kind of own it, okay? So what this means is that we tend to take it extremely personally and basically allow our egos to identify with the insult. You know, it's like we're literally wearing the insult or the disrespect, like the scarlet letter A, right? We're wearing it. We own it. And it might really even feel like sometimes that we're literally walking around with it. We can't shake it off. We can't take that clothing off, that piece of clothing. Our grip is that strong. Mm-hmm. For instance, very often, children who are abused take on the identity of shame. They somehow believe that the abuse was their fault, that it is their shame to, you know, when it really belongs to the person, right? We can all agree with that as adults. It belongs to the person who abused them. But the children literally wear, it's like they're wearing somebody else's clothes, that identity, and believing that it's theirs. And this can continue on until adulthood. Right? So along with owning it, another way that we increase the pain of this first arrow is by chewing on it, right? Like a dog might chew on its sore foot, just really gnawing on our story of hurt or harm. And sometimes we can do this again for a couple of hours. And sometimes this lasts for decades, right? We just keep chewing on it. That dog, we can't let the bone go. Gotta gnaw on it and it just can't even recognize it as a bone anymore. It's been so chewed up. We can also cause ourselves and others harm by retaliating in some way. You know, barking, biting back, if you will. You know, maybe we make some snarky comment. Or when we're insulted, right? Sometimes it's almost automatic. You know, someone says something, you say something right back, snarky comment. Or we might torment the insulter with something, you know? Make them feel some pain. Or we might in some way get them in trouble, feel that urge to get them in trouble. Or again, we might do something that we think might hurt them. Okay? So we also tend to cause both ourselves and others harm by blaming. Okay? And we make the insulter somehow wrong, right? Really chewing on all the ways that they are truly awful, evil incarnate. So just for a moment, think about that. Anybody's really insulted you and you just, wow, they just, that was, how do you relate to that person? Just throwing it out, no judgment, just think about it, right? What do you do with that? We can also fan the flames of the hurt by pouring more and more fuel on it and keep it going, right? Adding more sticks to the fire. Keep it going. You know, for instance, some of the ways that we do this, keep it going, is we might start dragging other people into our drama, right? Talking about it over and over with our friends or our partner or whoever. Can you believe that? Blah, 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 blah. You know? Or calling our friends and relatives, maybe telling everyone in town that we can think of about some particular insult, something that happened. Can you believe, you know, we keep throwing, and does that ever help? Really think about it. Throwing the sticks onto that fire, does that ever help to spread the fire? You know? Or we might even continue to amp up the drama with the person who insulted us. And keep the back and forth going and going because we really want to win. We want to win. These are our strategies I'm throwing out there. You know? I want to win. And somehow we think that by winning we'll remove the pain of that first insult, the pain of that first arrow, and we won't have to feel it if we fight it. If I fight this, I won't have to feel what I'm feeling. I won't have to address the fact that there's an arrow in my heart. And of course, we tend to keep the flames hot by continuing to fire the fuel, the drama in our own minds, right? So we don't just put the fire out there. We continue to pour more fuel on the fire in our minds and stir that up. Everybody looks really bummed right now. You're thinking about it, right? How you do that. And so how do we work with it? That's what we do. You know, those are some of our strategies to avoid the pain of the first arrow. So how do we work with that second arrow? The pain that we ourselves put upon ourselves. How do we allow ourselves to let go of our strong grip on blame and insult, and bring some cooling and healing to our own hearts. And so to start, I want to share a few stories from the teachings. And the first is from the Indian spiritual teacher Osho, who wrote about a time when the Buddha was said to have been traveling through a village, and some of the villagers who didn't agree with his teachings all came out and started insulting him, started insulting the Buddha. And apparently, they used all the four-letter Pali words that they knew and threw that at him and was just yelling at him. But the Buddha just stood there listening silently, very attentively, until the crowd had sort of spent itself. And when they were finished, he very pointedly bowed to them and said this, "Thank you for coming to me, but I'm in a hurry. I have to reach the next village. People will be waiting for me there. I cannot devote more time to you today, but tomorrow, coming back, I will have more time. You can gather again, and tomorrow, if something is left that you wanted to say and have not been able to, you can say it. But for today, please excuse me." And the people couldn't believe it, their ears. One of them said, raised their hand and said, "Have you not heard us? We've been abusing you like anything, and you've not even answered." And the Buddha replied, "If you wanted an answer, then you have come too late. You should have come 10 years ago. Then I would have answered you. But for these 10 years, I have stopped being manipulated by others. I am no longer a slave. I am my own master. I act according to myself, not according to anybody else. I act according to my inner need. You cannot force me to do anything. It's perfectly good. You wanted to abuse me, and you abused me. Feel fulfilled." "You have done your work perfectly well, but as far as I am concerned, I don't take your insults, and unless I take them, they are meaningless." And Osho said about the story, when somebody insults you, you have to become a receiver. You have to accept what they say. Only then can you react. But if you don't accept, if you simply remain detached, if you keep the distance, if you remain cool, what can they do? When he was asked about how to deal with being insulted, the Buddha said this, "Someone can throw a burning torch into the river. It will remain alight until it reaches the river. The moment it falls into the river, all fire is gone. The river cools it. I have become a river. You throw abuses at me. They are fire when you throw them, but the moment they reach me in my coolness, their fire is lost. They no longer hurt. You throw thorns. Falling in my silence, they become flowers. I act out of my own intrinsic nature." And so I love that story from Osho, but I also want to offer you a similar one from the suttas, because I can't responsibly talk about how to work with insult without offering you what is really considered the main sutta on this topic. And it's called the Akosa or Insult Sutta, and it's also sometimes simply known as the Abusing the Buddha Sutta. And so as the story goes, there was a high priest in the Hindu class, a Brahmin, who had become incensed because the head of his clan, who happened to be his eldest brother, had become a Buddhist monk shortly after visiting the Buddha. And this Brahmin didn't think the Buddha should have made his brother a monk, right? So this Brahmin paid the Buddha a visit, mainly to abuse and insult him. That was his plan. And here I want to read you a part of the actual sutta. "Angered and displeased, the Brahmin went to the Blessed One and, on arrival, insulted and cursed him with rude, harsh words. When this was said, the Blessed One said to him, 'What do you think, Brahmin? Do friends and colleagues, relatives and kinsmen, come to you as guests? Yes, Master Gotama, sometimes friends and colleagues, relatives and kinsmen come to me as guests. And do you serve them with staple and non-staple foods and delicacies? Yes, sometimes I serve them with staple and non-staple foods and delicacies. And if they don't accept them, to whom do these foods belong? If they don't accept them, Master Gotama, these foods are all mine. And the Buddha said, in the same way, Brahman, that with which you have insulted me, who is not insulting, that with which you have taunted me, who is not taunting, that with which you have berated me, who is not berating, that I don't accept from you. It's all yours, Brahman. It's all yours. Whoever returns insult to the one who is insulting, returns taunts to one who is taunting, returns a berating to one who is berating, is said to be eating together, sharing company with that person. But I am neither eating together nor sharing your company, Brahman. It is all yours. It is all yours. And the Buddha went on to say, you make things worse when you flare up at someone who's angry. Whoever doesn't flare up at someone who's angry wins a battle hard to win. You live for the good of both, your own and the others, when, knowing the others provoked, you mindfully grow calm. When you work the cure of both, your own, the others, those who think you a fool know nothing of Dharma. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that story. As an aside to the story, apparently after this teaching, the Brahmin, like his brother, also decided to become a follower of the Buddha. And he eventually became a monk. And the special name he received as a monk was Akosa, which means the insulter. There's another wonderful story about insult that involves a man who travels a long way to see this renowned guru in India. And when he's finally able to sit before the guru, he asks, tell me, guru, what is the secret to eternal happiness? And the guru says, bows and says, to not argue with fools. And the man says, I disagree. And the guru bows back deeply and says, yes, you are right. So, in the Buddhist tradition, anger is associated with what's called the hell realm, which is a state or place of intense pain and claustrophobia. And so you might notice that whenever someone does something to insult you, you know, and you feel strong anger, what I find interesting is to notice that it also has this quality of claustrophobia, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Right? It's like you're being squeezed into a tight place. You might feel really boxed in. It might be hard to breathe, right? Or there might be a sense of panic. When someone, just check it out when you're insulted next time. Do you feel claustrophobic in some way, right? Everything might feel tight, really tight and constricted. And it might also feel like you just want to bust out of your skin. That sense of claustrophobia. It's incredibly uncomfortable. And what we want to do, usually, almost immediately, is to get out. We want to get out of our own bodies, the situation where we're boxed in. And so we might scream. We might throw something. You know, we might send that angry email as a way to do that, to relieve some of the strong sense of feeling squeezed. We want to relieve that pressure. We just can't deal with it. So we got to do something, right? What the teachings are asking us to do at that very moment when we feel the squeeze is to restrain ourselves, to actually pause. Wow, that's hard in that moment. And so this pause might involve, you know, and pausing, by the way, involves patience, right? Patience is, as I've been saying these past few weeks, really important, patience. And so this pause might include, for instance, physically leaving the room. Just gotta leave the room. Or you might decide to stop and take just a few deep breaths, just, you know, a few minutes of pause, and then maybe longer pause. You might even ask for a kind of collective pause, like in the middle of a heated argument, or when somebody, maybe that's close to you or something, says something that's really painful, really insulting. Instead of using your stratagems to get out, pause. Can we have a pause? Put your hand up. Wow, gotta stop for a second. Mm-hmm. And this is often called the sacred pause, and mindfully knowing when it's necessary can help us in many ways. So the first is that it can, you know, help us to calm the strong sensations of anger, that squeeze that we're experiencing, by just simply allowing the physical sensations to flow through us without acting on them, without adding more fuel to it, right? What happens when someone yells at you and you yell back? Does that ever help? What does that do? Just makes it, the fire, the flame, go. Yeah. So for instance, in that pause, we can allow the heat of it, for instance, to be felt, the pounding of our hearts, maybe the clenching of our jaws or our hands, you know, the achiness in the heart, ouch. Use our breath to connect to what's happening in the present moment and calm the body a bit. We can pause with it. It's going to calm that fire a little bit, or at least contain it a little bit so it doesn't go out of control. And as we breathe and pause, calming the body can then help us to calm and cool the mind, so that, you know, instead of the heat of the flames, the steam, if you will, we can start, as it starts to cool and maybe the smoke clears a bit, imagine that, we can start to see things more clearly, right? With all that, without all the fire and the heat of it. And this pause is exactly what can help us to restrain ourselves so that we don't say something or do something that we're really going to regret later, right? And really restrain and pause and lean into that sacred pause. It's like one of the rules for myself, I think I've said this before, is that, you know, when my heart is still racing and pounding, do not hit the send button, right? Don't do it. Has it ever been good when you hit the send button when your heart is pumping? Mm-hmm. Never, right? So again, in the teachings, patience is actually one of the main antidotes to anger. So being mindful about taking this pause is actually incredibly important. And so often my practice starts with patience or restraint, not biting the hook, if you will. You get that, you know, somebody says something, somebody does something, don't bite the hook or react right away, or defend, or explain, you know? Or maybe most especially, you know, craft that thing that you want to say or the email with a barb attached to it, that we sometimes do. And for me, to be honest, I think for all of us, sometimes this, it doesn't happen instantly. You know, it takes a while sometimes. You know, maybe several heart-pounding, self-righteous attempts at crafting sort of defense or, you know, explanatory email or whatever you want to say, until we recognize what we're doing and then give up and restrain ourselves, okay? So this might take a while. The pause isn't like, oh, just a couple seconds, although that can even help, even like one breath. Just that long can sometimes make all the difference. And as a confession, a few times over the years, when the insult I've received has been particularly harsh and the pressure feels really high, I have, on occasion, impulsively said that thing or sent that email. And I have always regretted doing so, always. In fact, the truth is sending back an email always feels worse, or saying that thing that pops out of our mouth, because, you know, as bodhisattvas, as people on the path, we are committing to do no harm. And so sometimes we can feel like we failed ourselves, right, when that happens. I know I do. It's like, I just feel this sense of regret and failure. Like, I can't believe I just did that. And you can't take it back, right? Can't take the email back. Can't take the throwing something back. Can't take back what you said. It's out there. It was heard. Someone heard it and received it. Can't take it back. So, happily, most of the time, I do manage to pause and slowly take my fingers away, step away from the keyboard kind of thing. And the very next thing that I know to do from the teachings is to go directly to my heart. Directly to my heart. And sometimes, you know, we can actually just literally place a hand on the heart and close our eyes and offer ourselves metta and friendship and compassion and allow ourselves in that moment to feel the first arrow. You know, feel the sting of it, the ouch. You think about it, all the other strategies are ways that we're trying to avoid just that. I don't want to, ow. I don't want to feel that. So if we can allow it, this is super important, allowing that. And, you know, we don't want to use the practice of patience or restraint to somehow ignore or cover over or suppress the fact that what was said or done hurt us, that we're human. Okay? We don't want to ignore or pretend that someone's just shot an arrow into our heart and we're standing there bleeding. That's not what we're practicing when we talk about patience and restraint. That's not it. Okay? What we are practicing is more along the lines, again, of those famous three words from the Zen tradition, which is, this is it. This is it, right? This is the situation. This is what was just done. This is what was just said, you know? Which is always and forever followed by two more words, which is, now what? This is it. Now what? What is the wisest, most compassionate response, which includes sometimes no response at all? That can be a response, right? One that we don't think about sometimes because we want to win or we want to say or we want to... Sometimes there's just no response. Like the Buddha said, it's not mine. I don't need to explain. I don't need to do anything. It's not mine. So just as a quick review, many of you know the acronym STOP. For practice, it's a pretty simple one. And it can be really useful, I find, STOP, when in that moment we feel somehow blamed or insulted. Right? So I've mentioned insult in here, but just think about, you know, insult can include blame. How do we deal with blame? Think about when you're blamed. What's your immediate reaction? Is it defense? Right? We don't want to feel that. It's like automatic. Well, let me explain that first. So stop is what it is. Stop. Just stop. Pause. That's the pause there. Stop. Right? And the T is for take a breath. Really, sometimes it can just be one breath or more. Take a breath. And the O is for open to the ouch. Think of the O. Open up to the ouch. Ow. That hurt. Right? Ouch. And then the P, of course, is for proceed. How do I want to proceed? Which means respond instead of react. How do I really want to proceed? What do I want to do next? But the P can also mean park, which again is that there's nothing to do here. I'm going to park. And so once we've used that stop practice, we can then remember the teachings from the Akosa Sutra, which is first to remember that what the person offered is not ours unless we decide to have supper with them, unless we decide to share that. Right? So we don't need to take it so personally. We don't need to own it. And we don't need to decide to eat those staple and non-staple foods and delicacies, if you will, that were offered. I am neither eating together nor sharing your company. It is all yours. Keep that in mind. I also like to imagine that we don't need to pick up or put on, if you will, whatever outfit that's been offered either. Right? We can recognize that those clothes, if you will, are theirs. I like to think of food, but there's an outfit because it's an identity, right? Like, here's this outfit that I think you should wear. Sometimes comes with blame and insult. We don't have to put the outfit on. We don't have to own it or walk around with that outfit on, right? Another way of not taking it so personally is sometimes to remember that very often, this person does and says unkind things not only to us, but to others. Or says similar things to others, because it's their conditioning. It's their belief system. So we don't need to take that personally either. And when we can remember this instead of aversion, sometimes it can actually create a sense of compassion in us, you know, for what the pain that this person must be carrying around because of their own conditioning that makes them act this way and believe these things. Right? Whenever we can restrain ourselves and stop the flow of aggression that urges us to defend, blame, or even attack, and instead kindly respond, it can actually bring us a kind of joy. Right? Along with compassion and more of a sense of connection. Because we can recognize that we're following the intentions of this teaching and recognize that we didn't add more fuel to the fire. We didn't add more fuel. We didn't put those clothes on. We didn't retaliate. We can find some joy in that. Yeah. Because the more we practice, the more we're going to do that. The more that becomes our response, our natural response, rather than our automatic reaction. It becomes more of a mindful, habitual response. I often like to recall these famous words, again from the Dhammapada. He abused me, attacked me, defeated me, and robbed me. For those carrying on like this, hatred does not end. She abused me, attacked me, defeated me, and robbed me. For those not carrying on like this, hatred ends. Hatred never ends through hatred. By non-hate alone does it end. This is an ancient truth. That's a really famous part of the Dhammapada. Along these same lines, whenever we're able to respond with both wisdom and compassion, the two wings of practice, we're following the teachings of the Akosa Sutta in another way, which is to work the cure of both, your own and the others. And again, the cure for further aggression or hatred is wisdom and compassion, just like water is the cure for fire. Right? We don't fight fire by pouring more fuel on it. The teachings also show us that we can actually use the insult as a way to practice these two things even more. So again, we can bow to the people who insulted us truly, you know, like they're little Buddhas, and we say thank you. And, you know, we can use all the insults and rudeness as really fodder for practice. So I think I'm out of time, so I'm going to end with this wise advice from Pema Chodron, who writes about this way. She says, "This is advice on how to work with your fellow beings. Everyone is looking for someone to blame, and therefore aggression and neurosis keeps expanding. Instead, pause and look at what's happening with you. When you hold on so tightly to your view of what they did, you get hooked. Your own self-righteousness causes you to get all worked up and suffer. So work on cooling that reactivity rather than escalating it. This approach reduces suffering, yours and everyone else's. So let's just sit for the last few minutes. And just invite you all to take a nice deep breath in and out. A couple rounds of these. Placing a hand on the heart and the belly. And just for a moment, I want to invite you to consider a time recently when someone did or said something you felt was in some way insulting or blaming you. And consider your reaction. What happened in the mind, body, heart? How did you respond? No judgment, just notice. What's your habitual way of responding? And I want you to consider how you might do this differently next time. How would you like to respond when this happens next time? How would you like to be with that first arrow? With yourself and your heart? Even setting an intention for your heart here. And finally, I want to end with one of my favorite quotes for you to contemplate. The author is unknown. An unhealed person can find offense in pretty much anything someone does. A healed person understands that the actions of others has absolutely nothing to do with them. Each day, you get to decide which one you will be. Mm-hmm.